Welcome along. Thanks for joining me on another D Word podcast. This week, my guest is Naomi Thompson from Anglia Ruskin University, and we're going to be chatting about the Melodic Project, which looks to co-design and test a new music therapy protocol and guide for people with dementia on NHS wards. Well, Naomi, it's great to meet you. Pleasure to have you here on the D Word. Music, one of my favourite subjects, so I always love talking about music on the show. Before we go into the research that you're doing at the moment and the project you're involved in, just give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. And thank you very much for having me here. It's wonderful to be with you here on the D Word. Yes, so my name's Naomi, as you said. I'm a trained music therapist. So we work with qualified healthcare professionals who work using music with people across the life spectrum and with all sorts of different needs and skills and wonderful things. So we're working really to help people through music specifically towards a therapeutic goal. And I'm a flautist. I play flute and I play piano, and then I can sort of strum badly on a guitar and hit a drum if it's thrown my way. So that's my musical background, and I decided to pursue a music therapy route, which I'm loving.
Yeah, I'm sure you can do all of those far better than I can, to say the least. And yeah, I think you've underplayed it a bit, isn't it? The music therapist. So am I right in thinking it's a 2-year full time or 3-year part time master's course, isn't it?
Yes, you're right. Yeah, so it's a postgraduate qualification. There's a fair few of them around in the UK. Most of them are full time over 2 years. And then there's a couple now that are part-time over 3 years as well, which is great to sort of, increase the accessibility of these courses. And then we register with a board called the Health and Care Professions Council, which would be like how you would have your nurse registered with their board to make sure that our practice is safe and we're held to standards of practice, which is important, isn't it, when we go and work with a professional that we know that they are safe and trusted to and qualified to do the work that they are setting out to do.
Absolutely. I mean, I read something which was a headline in the Daily Mail that made me smile, because said singing songs and banging a drum going to help tackle one of the most challenging symptoms of dementia. And I thought, well, it's nice to get some publicity, but there's just a little bit more to it than that.
Yeah. Well, it might look a bit sometimes when we're working with people with dementia, we do use a lot of songs. So it might look a bit like, oh, just come in and sing a song or bang a drum and it will help you feel better. But what's really key is that we're using music tailored to the needs of that person in the moment to meet their needs. So that might be that they are distressed and sort of their regulation is really high. So we can use music, really tailor it to them to help match that and help to calm them down, bring them back down. Or that person is quite lethargic, quite sleepy, but actually we're coming towards tea time and we need, to help them to eat some food and drink some fluid. These things are really important to help keep us well. So we can then use music as we come towards those times to enliven somebody and get them in the right mood and the right place in themselves to partake in those other activities. And we work as well a lot with other staff in the settings where we're working with to help inform how music might be used, whether that's creating a playlist for particular patients or residents or people with dementia to be used at different times. I use the word patients because my work is in dementia wards, so that's what first comes to my mind. But when we're working with people, how we can use music in really tailored ways to meet a specific need, and always observing how that's being received and responding to that in the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about it's good to have a qualification so people trust the work that you're doing. And let's move on to melodic, because obviously it's good to have research behind you to also prove that the work you're doing is valuable. Music therapy embedded in the life of dementia in patient care. I will call it melodic after that, because I don't want to go through all that again. But tell us a little bit about that. I mean, it was launched in September, am I right?
Yes, we recently launched. It's a study based at Anglia Ruskin University, which is where I work at the Cambridge Institute for Music Therapy Research. And it's co-sponsored, so that just means it's also led alongside by the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough NHS Foundation Trust. So that's our local mental health trust to our institute at Cambridge. And we're funded by a body called the National Institute for Health and Care Research. So that's funded, that is funded by the government, by the Department of Health and Social Care. So we've received funding for 18 months for an 18-month project. And the project is looking to co-design, and I'll unpack what that means, a music therapy manual or a music therapy guide for how we can best use music and the skills of a music therapist on inpatient dementia wards within NHS trusts. So we're specifically looking at mental health trusts and where people with dementia might go when they're very unwell and there's a real high level of distress, and they go there to help assess their needs and change their care to try and help that meet their needs better. And then, you know, go back into the community to wherever's the appropriate place for them. So we're really looking at how we can use music therapy to help manage that distress that people are experiencing on those wards, just as another sort of tool for staff to be using that might help patients. And music's already used a huge amount on the wards, in lots of different ways. Some wards have music therapists, lots don't, most don't. But staff, there's sort of this already a wonderful understanding of the role that music can have with people with dementia and in supporting them, their well-being and lifting and bringing joy and bringing memories. So it's used a lot. So it's helping to sort of help that be used in a more systematic way, in a more tailored way to reach a role for that person to fulfill a particular need for each patient. So using it in a more patient-centered way, and sort of, yeah, instead of thinking, you know, or you, I don't know, morning care routine is quite tricky for this person, instead of thinking, oh, I just got to go through it, thinking, oh, maybe we can use some music, let's listen to some music for 10 minutes first, and then we might be in a place where we can carry on listening to music while we do whatever the tasks are that do need to be done, the care delivery tasks. Yes, and to unpack that co-design a little bit, that's where we work alongside. So we've got a team of researchers who, most of whom, like myself, are also clinicians in various ways. We've got a psychiatrist, a psychologist, another music therapist, and I've all worked clinically with people with dementia. But then we're also working alongside a co-design group, or what we're calling a co-design group. So that's a group of people with lived experience of dementia and of specifically of mental health dementia wards in the NHS. And they're sort of, we were working with them to design this study, but then also now they're helping inform how we run it, supporting recruitment. And then when we've got data, how we analyze it and the findings, helping us to understand it and place things within sort of current practice so that hopefully we can design something that that will be helpful and also possible to deliver. Because if it was just me from my perspective as a music therapist, I might design a wonderful protocol, but then I'd show it to a nurse and they say, you've got no chance of actually, you know, we don't have the staff to do this, we don't have the resources to do this. So it's about creating something that's also practical to deliver as well as something that will be helpful. Yeah, because we know staff in these places are wonderful and working incredibly hard. So we absolutely don't want to be adding to the burden for them. We want it to be something that's helpful for patients first and foremost, but then also for staff and family members.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
This is the D Word podcast, where I'm chatting to this week's guest, Naomi Thompson from Anglia Ruskin University.
So I guess it's, you know, at the beginning, really, it's understanding what's causing the distress, isn't it? Before you go kind of further into it.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, Pete, and that's exactly where we're at now. So at the moment, we're running focus groups and interviews with different groups of people who have experience of dementia wards to understand different things, but mainly to understand what does distress look like on the wards and how is it currently being sort of managed and prevented, and then what ways is music used and how is that used to in relation to distress. So we're speaking with sort of different groups of people. So we're speaking with music therapists, we're speaking with ward staff, so staff who work on wards, ward management, so people who are in leadership positions within the ward and within the NHS Trust, and then with patients and family members. So that's currently what we are doing. And so then that will help to inform and guide the intervention that we will be designing, co-designing in later in 2024.
And I think it's a very important area, because we saw sadly during COVID that if people with cognitive decline are isolated and are not stimulated, then their cognitive decline increases in not a good way at all. And I'm thinking that introducing these non-drug type therapies in a setting like a hospital ward is really important.
Yes, absolutely. And in a place, however well intentioned things are, hospital wards are a sort of very clinical and institutionalized place. And there's some wonderful things about how we design them and designing them in circular ways so people can sort of move freely around a ward if they have that sort of drive to be moving. But at the end of the day, it's not like being in your own living room, and it can be a place that isn't in the environment a very personal space, and often is. So music can be a real way that we can bring people's something that's familiar to people in the moment to them there, and that can. Often music carries so much of our identity and our history and our memories of significant people, significant places, significant moments in our lives, and can bring those there in the moment, which is a real privilege. And we can be working with people on something that's so joyful and engaging and meaningful, and can also really bring a space of community. Music can help us to share things together when that might be difficult through verbal means. If we're relying on talking, that can be a difficult thing. So music has a way to transcend that need for words, which is really powerful in these settings. And then through sort of showing, there's specialised interventions that a music therapist like myself can come into a ward and deliver, and that might be particularly where there's really high levels of distress or really trying to understand what it is that is the trigger for that person, what it is they're trying to tell us that we're not understanding yet as a staff team supporting them. But also we can help inform on ways that music can be used by everybody on the ward, so that it's not just that music is there when the music therapist is there, because that's often not for large periods of the week, if they're there at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in a lot of ways, and I guess, you know, if you're relying on things like calming medications, then okay, it's a kind of one size fits all solution in one respect. But in the other respect, it can give you problems as well in terms of falls and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, the more you can go down the route of non-drug related interventions in hospitals, it's got to be, yeah, even it's got to be financially better for everybody as well as better for their health and welfare.
Yes, certainly drug interventions do have really serious side effects and shouldn't be taken lightly. And it can also have impacts on sort of increasing cognitive decline. And the risks are serious. And so it's about providing appropriate alternatives, better alternatives at the right time, because sometimes things... a patient has got to a point where they're so distressed that music is no longer going to be able to help calm them down. So it's about getting in there. If we're noticing people are starting to get slightly more, I don't know, a bit more bubbly, a bit more, you know, needing, you can sense it when somebody's about to get upset about something. How can we get in there? And there's not, sometimes that happens in a millisecond and that's very difficult. You know, I'm not saying this is a magic thing that can take away the need for any sort of medication. But we need to be using medication really carefully and only as a last resort, where there other, as you're saying, other non-drug interventions aren't helping. And music won't be the thing for everybody either. And also the, you know, I as obviously I'm a musician, I'm a music therapist, and I love music, but there are times when there's music that I love that is not the right time for me to hear it, and there are times when there's music that I hate that I think, oh, actually I quite fancy listening to that right now. So we've got to have enough flexibility that we're using the music that we know that individual enjoys, but also at the right time for them. You know, if I'm feeling a bit stressed, if somebody puts on sort of whale music for me, I find that really annoying. It's not at all what I'm wanting to hear. But maybe a bit of rock or something would be better for me at that time. But it would help me to sort of express, you know, we're still listening to what somebody's telling us. It's not just sort of trying to sweep everything under the carpet and always have everything calm and happy. We're not all calm and happy all the time. So we need to allow space for people to express more difficult emotions, but in a safe way, and in a way that we support them to manage those emotions, because that's where it can then become unsafe, and then sadly there's a reliance on medication to help manage those for that person.
But amongst the people you've spoken to, sort of carers and people living with dementia, what's the reaction been?
Yes, I think, without preempting our results, they haven't done the analysis yet, but when we speak to people about music is always really important to people, and they really echo that it needs to be the right music at the right time. But I think people love talking about music and the music that's important to them. It feels like while we're talking about a difficult, potentially a difficult subject, we're talking about, you know, mental health wards where people are unwell when they're on those wards. And, you know, the care that they've been receiving for whatever reason and a whole variety of reasons isn't able to meet their needs at that time, and there's been a breakdown in care in some way, often through no fault of any individual person, but just, you know, as a system, it's not supported that person in the way that they needed. But then we come to talk about music and there's just a lightness and a joy. And yeah, it's a real privilege to hear people's experiences of music and how they would like to have music. And sometimes there's restrictions in the way, you know, the trust is run, or there's restrictions in access to Wi-Fi, or all of these things that can limit the ways that we can sort of embed music in the way that we would perhaps like. But there's such wonderful examples of really amazing practice that people are doing, and you know, creating playlists for people and family members, putting together an iPod to bring in so that their loved one can use that. And there's different, you know, a playlist that will help if they're feeling distress. There's a playlist that will help if they're feeling sleepy. There's a playlist that is to help them calm and go to bed. There's a playlist to help wake up. You know, those sorts of things are really being done by some people really well. And a lot of this research isn't about trying to change the way people are doing it. It's sort of drawing on great practice that's being done and helping to roll that out, to share that, to embed that more into current everyday practice. So it's not just individual examples of good practice, of really good practice. It's something that's just normal, that is what we do on these dementia wards.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
This week's guest on the D Word podcast is music therapist Naomi Thompson from Anglia Ruskin University.
And I think it shows how important personal care is. Everybody is different. Everybody has their own experiences with music. As you were saying, everybody has those their type of music they'd like to hear at a certain time. Got to be honest with you, you approach me with a musical instrument, I recoil in horror, thinking I can't play any of this stuff, which is probably why I ended up being a DJ when I was younger. But still, music's played a massive part in my life, even though I can't play a note.
Yeah, and actually we find often, for me, the types of instruments we're using in music therapy sessions, people do a lot of singing, dancing, or just listening. Sometimes that's what we want to do, isn't it? It's just listen to what's going on and observe and tap your foot, or engage in small ways and big ways. But also people do, if I was handed a violin, I would have no clue what to do. But if we can have instruments that make really beautiful sounds but are quite accessible to play, so you don't need to have training to be able to play them, and that can be a really helpful way to help people to sort of get through that barrier of I don't know how to play an instrument, because actually we're all, so many of us, 99.99% of us, are so musical and rhythmic, and we use our bodies and our voices, all of these things we use musically to communicate all of the time. And often people with dementia are still able to do that, even if they're no longer able to use words. They're still able to communicate musically with us through vocalizations, or through the physical touch and rhythm, and how we can be with each other in a really sensory way. It's a real privilege. We can sort of, see people's, their remaining abilities. That sounds too small. It sounds too clinical to say that. But we see the people who are inside there still and able to reach out and show their personality, show who they are, words are no longer the way that they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with people that were, nonverbal, and yet if you put a certain tune on, they would know every lyric. You know, I think I like to think I know my music, but I've got far better than me in repeating the lyrics of songs. I mean, you know, this is a really good bit of research. I've got a big international audience. You know, I'm assuming there are people elsewhere in the world that are also looking at this, are they? Or are you fairly unique in what you're doing?
Yes, I think in terms of music therapy and dementia research, there is a big international spectrum. There's our institute, the Cambridge Institute for Music Therapy, has been part of different international projects that are happening. But largely those are happening either in care home settings or increasingly in sort of community settings. So for people living in their own home. But there's far less, I have to say, there's very little being done in dementia wards, while their dementia wards in some form exist in all over the world. The way that that's structured, the way that that looks, is might be slightly different within different healthcare systems. But there's very little research, I would say, in general, like at all, not just in music, but in how we provide care for people who are experiencing high levels of distress and needing to have a sort of specialist level of care. We've sort of done sort of big sort of searches of the literature in quite systematic ways. We've done, myself and others in the team have done different types of reviews, and there's very little research out there. So this is a part of, we're looking at music therapy on the wards and music, but there's also our colleagues are looking at other ways that we sort of provide care on wards to sort of map what's happening at the moment and then look at how we can and learn from that and what's working, what's not working. So it's a bit of a black hole of research, really, and looking at these wards that provide care for people with dementia. Yeah, and that's the same picture internationally, really. So there's lots to learn, lots to look at, which is why we're approaching it in a very, using this co-design approach, wanting to be walking alongside people with experience of these wards the whole way, because it's not like there's a lot of evidence that we're standing on already. We're kind of building those groundworks at the moment. And then we, you know, it's an 18-month project, and hopefully we'll have an intervention sort of protocol at the end of it and an accompanying guide. And then we can look at applying for more research funding to look at whether or not it's helpful and whether it works on wards, so whether it does reduce distress. So this part of the project, this 18 months, won't be answering those questions. That's not within the scope of our project. That's the sort of future. So it's sort of really building the blocks as we go.
Yeah, and again, you know, that's the important process you have to go through. You know, I've probably got the hunch thinking, yeah, I think this would work. But, you know, you still have to document it, and you have to, you know, make sure that you've got it 100% there. Obviously, there's finances involved and things like that. And that's why maybe people don't understand why it takes so long, because you have to go through all those steps.
Yeah, I think partly as well, it's what works. We sort of, I think there is an understanding and a feeling that music works, but how can we best use it? We don't know. What's the best way that we can be using music to the most of its ability? And how can music therapists help that and facilitate that process? So being there to deliver sort of specialist clinical interventions, but also helping to guide the way that music is embedded within the rest of the ward environment. Working alongside nurses and healthcare assistants. And
if someone is interested in taking part in you know, your project, talking to you, what would be their next step to get hold of you?
Yes, absolutely, thank you. Yes, so at the moment we're looking to include more people who are living with dementia in our co-design group, so to help inform the research and advise us and input into the music therapy package that we design together. So if you'd like to get in touch, the best way is via email. So my email is Naomi, spelled Naomi, Thompson, Thompson, at aru.ac.uk. And I wonder, Pete, might you be able to forward that to people if they would like to find out more?
Yeah, most certainly will. It's been fascinating. Thank you for introducing us into that world. And hopefully when you get a bit further on the research, we can get you back on the show and you can tell us a little bit how it's going on.
I'd love to, Pete. Thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely to share it with you.
Thanks to Naomi, and I look forward to hearing how the Melodic Project progresses in the future. That's it for this edition. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll join me again soon for another D Word podcast.